The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a handbrake off.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone. This is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Yesterday evening, the Arsenal beat Luton Town 2-0, keeping the pressure on Liverpool and Manchester City to reflect on the game and look ahead to Saturday's trip to the Amex. I'm joined by Art de Roche and Adrian Clark. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. Nice to see you guys. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of last night's game, I'm assuming we've seen Mesut Ozil's bodybuilder pics.
Extraordinary.
Well, the question really was that you know, when you retire, and especially as a professional athlete, I'm obviously addressing this to you. Adrian, you're a professional athlete, right? And then you stopped being a professional athlete. And what did you do to fill the void physically is what I'm asking, really.
Because obviously, I did the opposite. I just got a little bit fat. got a little bit softer around the edges.
It is true, by the way, like you can't see, but Adrian, he really, the screen on the Zoom can barely contain his enormity. I mean, really.
I didn't want to do any exercise for a bit, genuinely, just because, I don't know, I was over it, especially
running. It had been your job.
Especially running, because I never really enjoyed running. And even though I was all right at it, it wasn't fun. So yeah, the thought of going for runs to keep fit just really, really didn't appeal. So yeah, I'm trying to claw it back a little bit at the moment, but yeah, we'll see.
To be fair to Mesut, it's not like bodybuilding was his thing, right? Before he, when he was playing, he was quite a slight sort of player. I mean, obviously, you look at slight players and then you see them up close and go, blooming out, they're built, aren't they? They're not quite as slight as you imagine. But still, he seems to have taken it to a bit of an extreme. People were saying he looked a bit like a nightclub bouncer and what have you. I mean, obviously, you're quite a long way from retirement, and even then, I mean, do you? I mean, obviously, you physically keep in shape, but what would you do when you stop? Well, you write, don't you? So, basically, can keep doing that until you're 90.
I guess, yeah. If I wanted to, maybe I'd just play more PlayStation or something, more Football Manager. Yeah, I can't lie. I haven't given it much thought, but...
No need.
Yeah, I guess we'll just wing it when we get there.
I think I want to play loads of snooker, bit of bowls. I think that
retirement.
Would be...
Retirement?
Yeah, I think bit loads of holidays. Yeah, I mean, it's loads of stuff I'd want to do to fill my time. I reckon bodybuilding would be fairly low on my personal agenda.
Right. Yeah, you know what? Mine too, to be honest with you. And to be honest, I have no thoughts of retiring anyway. And I can't imagine, I mean, my genuine feeling is to die. And I don't, when I say die, I don't mean, you know, go down the toilet. I mean, actually die on stage in my 95th year, you know, because it happened to a mate of mine who actually, Ian Cognito, bless him, who died on stage. And there's a bit of me that sort of feels like, yeah, you know what? I wouldn't mind going the same way, but not for a while. But no hint of retirement. Certainly not this season, of course, because we are going for two major trophies and we're all on course at the moment. Arsenal 2, Luton 0. Well, Adrian, we talked about it before this game. Mikel made 5 changes to the 11. Kivior, Rice, Jorginho, Saka and Jesus came out the side. Zinchenko, Partey, Smith-Rowe, Nelson and Trossard came in. Adrian, was there a certain amount with this game where essentially it was almost like the last time when he can properly rest half the team?
Maybe, yeah. I think this was the game to do it. We've got a colossal April ahead. I mean, it is stacked with tough game after tough game after tough game. So he has to trust the players to step in on occasion and let the others have a breather. And this felt like the right moment.
Well, the right moment for the number of changes that he made is what I mean.
I think
really.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's a long time, isn't it? I think you have to go back to 2021 for the last time he made 5 changes in a league game. So it was pretty radical.
Really?
Is that right? Yeah, yeah. So it was pretty radical by Mikel Arteta's standards. But I think he viewed it, and I don't mean this disrespectfully towards Luton, but he almost viewed it like like an FA Cup tie where you're playing a championship team, or, you know, it's one of those where you can afford to make multiple changes and we should really win. And that was how it panned out.
Well, in hindsight, it worked that way, but we've seen plenty of games where it hasn't worked out that way.
Yeah, it can affect fluency, and definitely we weren't quite as fluid as we normally are. But I think the value of giving minutes as well to Smith Rowe, to Thomas Partey, to Trossard, to Zinchenko was every bit as important as resting the other guys, if I'm honest, because there will be injuries. There might be a suspension, and you need them to be sharp. We can't carry any passengers between now and the end of the season. So I thought it was a really smart move and a calculated gamble from the manager.
Yeah, which is what he's going to have to take from time to time. I mean, Art, the squad is looking strong compared to this time last year. I watched James do his On the Whistle piece last night at the ground, and he mentioned the equivalent fixture last season was Liverpool away, and that is when the wheels sort of started coming off the wagon. We're looking more controlled this year, aren't we? They basically expended less energy to get to this point, haven't they?
Yeah, even when you look at the way the game last night went, even though it was 2-0, and the game did get a bit stretched, it didn't really look like it was out of their hands, really. And I think when you look at not just the rotation of the starting 11, but bringing on Tomiyasu when needed was also a big help. But then you have Declan Rice coming off the bench as well as the first change to kind of, I guess, keep the standards up. It is a much better shape to the side right now compared to last April. And you'd hope, as Adrian said, Mikel's proactive in how he uses the squad, because he's got a squad there and it's just about how he chooses to use it, basically.
Emile Smith Rowe, one of the players that came in, I think everyone was maybe a little surprised, but also pleased to see him in the starting lineup. Won the ball in the lead up to the opening goal, set up the own goal, the second one. Adrian, I mean, he was voted man of the match as well. It's exactly what you wanted to see from him, because now he becomes an option, doesn't he, for the rest of the season? I mean, a serious option.
Yeah, definitely. It was the biggest sort of plus point, I think, of the evening for me. Seeing Emile Smith Rowe look as sharp as he was, look as hungry as he was, and make an impact. He kind of had to make an impact in the game because everyone else is kind of fit and available at the moment. If he'd have had a, you know, nondescript performance, that might have been it for him this season. We might have seen him for a few minutes here or there, and that's his lot. So, but now he's reminded the manager, he's reminded all of us what a good player he is. And I was impressed with his intelligence. I thought the way that he stole the ball for that first goal was brilliant, because, you know, I used to do the same. You sort of tuck, when the ball's on the other side, you have to tuck across to around the heart, you know, the midpoint of the pitch, if you drew a line down the pitch. And he anticipated that square pass into the midfielder.
It's that sprint, isn't it? It's that 10-yard sprint. He saw it happening and he thought, I'll get over there. And he sprinted hard and he won the ball.
It was a game-changing moment. And it's not, you don't just win games by dropping a shoulder and curling it top corner, or producing a moment of magic, or a slide rule pass. Sometimes it's a tackle. And without that decision from Emile Smith Rowe, we don't open the scoring there. And Martin Ødegaard doesn't get that fantastic goal. So, yeah, that was a huge moment. And for the second goal, in the build-up, and it was a long build-up, he made a run sort of towards the other side. And he basically ended up in that number 10 position, right between the lines. Luton's midfield was watching the ball. Luton's back five were sort of a little bit deep. And he just found a lovely little corridor and they all ignored him. And then he just sort of strolled into the box from Trossard's excellent pass. So, yeah, intelligent, hungry, high-class performance, I think, from Emile Smith Rowe. Well played.
And Art, you're nodding along. I mean, he is an option for the rest of the season. I mean, he's not first team at the moment, but it's a squad game. And we know, you know, as we've said, we've got 8 games to go in the league, plus hopefully 5 in the Champions League. There are some huge games coming up, and we cannot just play the 11 or 12 that Mikel Arteta has been picking. We need these sort of players to step up.
Exactly. And I think I kind of put the point of rhythm to him ahead of the game in the pre-match press conference, and he spoke about Reece Nelson and how last year he didn't need rhythm to have that moment against Bournemouth. But I think with him making those five changes, you saw that he actually wanted to give these guys proper exposure and minutes in their legs. And with Smith Rowe, I think you saw in that assist, I'm going to call it an assist.
Yeah.
You saw someone who was confident again, where I think someone else in that position, if they weren't confident, they might play the ball quite early. But he was...
No, he held on, didn't
he? He held on to it until the last moment and felt, I guess, assured in himself that he would be able to make that pass. And he did through the legs, and it results in the second goal. So yeah, a very pleasing performance. And I don't know about you guys, but when I saw he was in the start 11, it completely changed my mood going into the game. So yeah, I hope he continues to be an option going forward.
What mood were you in before you saw Emile Smith-Rowe? And then what mood were you in after you saw Emile Smith-Rowe was in the team?
So going into the game, I was kind of like, oh, Luton Town, I'm not sure.
Really?
Yeah, really. I was like, quite nervous, just because even though it seems like it should be an easy win, they do give teams a tough afternoon. So I thought it would be quite a nervous evening. And then the team news dropped, and I guess my emotion after that was just, all right, I'm here, I'm ready, I'm alive again. Emile Smith Rowe can have that effect on people.
Oh, no, I was slightly sort of facetious there, because I also was in a bit of a pumped up and slightly nervous mood. We got such a good result on Sunday whenever it was, the weekend against Manchester City. And then it was obvious we had to win. Adrian, I want to ask you about Thomas Partey. I mean, he doesn't have the pace now. I mean, I saw at the weekend when Kevin De Bruyne ran away from him. There was another moment last night when whoever had the ball for Luton ran away from him. He's still a calm presence, and maybe there's still a bit of rustiness. I don't know. Now we've got Declan Rice sitting in there. You see... Declan Rice does all that, but he's got the energy as well. Thomas doesn't quite seem to have that.
It is fun. It is a strange one, because he is a really powerful runner, or that's always been one of his sort of big strengths, hasn't it? Especially the way he sort of powers through down the middle. But you're right. I think the City game last season was a bit of an eye-opener. He really didn't track back very well, I think, when De Bruyne powered through the middle. And it was the same at the weekend. That was really noticeable, wasn't it? When Declan lost it, he got back very, very quickly and won it. But when the same thing happened to Thomas, he was sort of, looked like he sort of, you know, had a rucksack on his back. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think he has lost a little bit of athleticism. I think that is the sad truth. You know, he's into his 30s. He's had quite a lot of injuries, hasn't he? So maybe that's understandable. He's going to have to adapt his game, isn't he? He's going to have to be more of a thinking footballer like Jorginho to stay at the very top level, Thomas Partey, because that was one of his key assets. And if that's not, if that's diminished, he has to reinvent himself a little bit. So what I thought he did well was receive the ball from the back and start the moves between the centre-backs. I think it helped that Zinny was playing, because he could then step into midfield. So it was a good fit. I think those two, when they're in the same team, change the way that we build up from the back. And he made some good forward passes, but he doesn't look quite as effective as before.
We'll talk about Zinchenko in a second. Art, you just wanted to say something there.
Yeah, just on the point on adapting his game, there was one thing that was maybe slightly different in the build-up, I felt, where Partey would actually drop in as a centre-back, and then Ødegaard would come in as almost the number six and be the first receiver, which slightly changed how Arsenal would build up from Ryan. I thought that was quite interesting. Might be something to look out for in the weeks coming up when Partey comes on for Declan Rice in some games.
Yeah. Oh, I'll ask you this. Zinny, I mean, there were moments when he carried the ball about 10 yards further than I thought he would when he did that little, I'm going to pass, no, I'm not, no. And he's a few yards further forward. And he does have that option that almost no one else in the team can do. He walked through the middle of our penalty area in the first half at one point. And we came, where's he going? But he brings the ball out so beautifully.
That led to the goal. That led to the second goal. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he is perfect for low block games at home when we're playing, but we ain't got too many more of them. I mean, he's a squad option, isn't he? A very, very good squad option, but I think it's interesting, isn't it, now, how the team's evolving?
Definitely. And this is what the option's all about, because I don't think we would have had this conversation at the start of the season, where maybe the preference now is a more traditional left back in Jakub Kivior. And the fact that Zinchenko comes back in and that dynamic looks completely different now, I think is probably a good thing, because teams who are analysing Arsenal have probably been, okay, we're just going to plan for Jakub Kivior, but now Zinchenko's back and that throws a bit of a spanner in the works. So I think it's quite an interesting development to have for the last, I guess, 9-10 games of the season.
Wait till I see Timber as well, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he's a step up. He's like a perfect hybrid, isn't he? But anyway, we'll get to him in a bit. Adrian?
Yeah, I thought he defended really well, actually, on the night.
Zinny, good spring.
He's got a good spring. He defended inside the box really well. I think he picked red play excellently, picked up a lot of loose balls. I think he had a pretty good game. What's also stood out was how little he got forward. I thought that was unusual. It was more almost as if he was out to prove that he could be a nice solid defensive option, because that's what Kivior is. I don't think he made a pass in Zinny beyond the 18-yard box. I don't think he got into that final quadrant at all in the game.
Well, I mean, Ben White stepping forward as well. Talking of the defenders, by the way, post-match, Rob Edwards, the Luton manager, said maybe the Arsenal are the one team out of three that are fighting that can play any game, whether it's a physical game, if it's a footballing game, if it's a running game. Whatever it is, they've got the answer. They've got the personnel to play any way. Adrian, I mean, we've talked about the defence on 100 occasions this season, but I mean, I know some people are a little bit worried at 2-0. You know, we've seen Arsenal mess it up a few times at 2-0 at home, letting one in the 83rd minute, and then we're panicking for the last 10. But this team so love to defend. Those boys, I looked across the back at one point and there was White and there was Saliba and there was Gabriel. And I thought, I think we'll be okay.
Well, on our show last night, there was a supporter at the end who sort of grabbed a mic in the studio. He basically said, he started talking about something else and he goes, do you know what? He says, I don't think we're ever going to concede a goal ever again.
That's funny. But you know what? I understand the point he's making. I have to say, I think we will concede a goal again at some point. I mean, I just think it's the law of averages say that will happen.
I dispute what Rob Edwards said in a way. I don't want to sort of pour cold water on it. But I think that all of the top three can play different types. Can play a physical game, and footballing game, and running game. They're all pretty rounded teams. I think what he was trying to say really is more a case of City have their style, and we all know what that style is. Liverpool have a very distinct style as well, with Klopp and that sort of direct, vertical, aggressive football. Whereas we can mix it up. I think that's what he was saying.
Yeah.
And we can handle. Yeah, we can surprise teams by out-footballing them, out-muscling them, by playing a more direct style on occasion as well. So, yeah, that's a measure of Arteta's work. You know, his body of work is just fantastic. Because
it is, no doubt. And one more thing, Art, in terms of the defence, I mean, I've been saying it a bit lately, you know, what Sir Alex Ferguson said years ago is that attacks win games, defences win championships. I mean, we have probably the best defence, certainly the best defence in the country. I think the numbers say that, but possibly the best defence in Europe. I mean, it does give me a lot of hope for the rest of the season. When you see the way that Gabriel was in the last 10 minutes, he's like, there was a really nice shot a Luton boy had that Gabriel just got on one knee and just blocked it. It looked like it. I mean, that would have hurt. I mean, he didn't even wince. I mean, they just do not want to concede goals, do they? And a word for the keeper as well in all that, because it's now 11 clean sheets and he missed the first four matches of the season, as well as the two matches against Brentford, his parent club. We got a mean defence, and that can count for a huge amount in the running.
A lot. And with Gabriel, I think we've seen it for years, but obviously now that Arsenal are fighting for titles consistently, now everyone's kind of paying attention. But yesterday I thought he was one of my options for a man of the match because of how often he had to step in when the game got stretched. There were a lot of those moments where he was in that, I don't even know what to call it. It's like a wicketkeeper in cricket when they have that stance. I don't even know what it's called.
Crouching is what you're saying? Well, not really crouching.
Kind of, but...
Yeah, squatting.
Yeah. We'll go with squatting to block crosses and shots.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And yeah, he stood up, has been standing up, and really pleased that he's there, because now Arsenal actually have more clean sheets this calendar year than goals they've conceded, which is quite ridiculous to think about. And yeah, with David Raya as well, I think a lot of the times he's getting clean sheets, he's not having to do anything, which is a good thing. it's not bad in any way. But
I could have played in goal last night, to be honest with you.
I think you might have kept a clean sheet, Stoney. I do.
I actually think I would have done, yeah. Adrian, what do you want to
say? Yeah, the numbers are just extraordinarily good in terms of our sort of defensive work. And we do protect our goalkeeper better than anyone else in the league. Shots on target faced this season: Liverpool 103, City 91, Arsenal 71.
Yeah.
That's massive. Yeah. And the expected goals, we're on 21, City are on 29, Liverpool are on 35. That's a big discrepancy.
I mean, they say it's fine margins, don't it? But that's not even fine margins.
It's not a fine margin. And really, in terms of goals conceded, we're not that different to Liverpool and Man City. So the numbers suggest that the other teams are maybe riding their luck a little bit more than we are. And maybe we've been, you know, hard done by to a certain degree because we give up so few chances. But yeah, if we can maintain this level of sort of keeping teams at arm's length, we've got a heck of a chance. We have.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
They get a handbrake off and you can see that they are more free to play.
We talked so much about Martin Ødegaard on the pod. I just want to, I don't know, it's not just him actually. It was the guys who played against Man City the weekend and then played again. Martin Ødegaard, Gabriel Magalhães, William Saliba, Ben White. Listen, it was knackering enough watching it at the game on the weekend. And I know how tired everyone was at the end of that game. And City, by the way, made a number of changes last night as well. Didn't stop them battering Villa. But I don't think anyone actually genuinely thought they weren't going to win.
We ran 120K last night, which is high. So there are some games where a Premier League team will run 105. And probably your average is about 110, 111. It didn't feel like we'd ran 120 kilometres, but maybe that's a sign that the fresh legs came in with a little bit more energy. And
really helps.
Ødegaard was definitely the trigger. He ran 12 on his own, which is really high.
Tremendous.
And he was someone that never stopped pressing. I thought our pressing in general in the first half was great, but he was really the trigger, I thought, and the one that basically, on a night where we gave our star players a rest, he basically did overtime, didn't he? I mean, he didn't coast through that game. He put his heart and soul into it, and I thought the team needed it, actually, because it wasn't, you know, a fervent atmosphere. It was a bit quiet, wasn't it? That you know, there's a lot of changes, as we said. So it needed a skipper to step up, and he did. And what about the skills, by the way? What about that little choppy move.
What, that the was, pass through the legs to Emil for
that
the
was
shot
brilliant.
For safety.
Ben know, White with a little drag back turn. Yeah. I don't know what name the kids call that one.
It's going to be called the Ben White. We are calling it the Ben White.
Trossard. The one with Trossard. I don't know if you remember this one.
Trossard, the Clive turn.
He ran down the left, didn't he? And Andros Townsend, who's nearly as old as me, he's charged back about 70 yards. He's put in a proper shift to track him. And he gets there and he slows him down. And then Trossard pretends to go towards his own goal and then just does this brilliant Cruyff turn. And
beautiful,
I just,
wasn't it?
It must have broken Andros's heart. I felt for him. But I like the little flicks and tricks. It was great.
Listen, we've got some serious talent. We know we have. One other thing, the amount of people who left early. I was there till the end. I mean, there were changes on the pitch. I think there were changes in the crowd as well. I mean, somebody said it's Easter, so season ticket holders passed their tickets on. There may have been a few more tourists there than usual. But it wasn't like it was a late kickoff. It was only 9:15 when I reckon it was a good 4,000 or 5,000 near me got up and left. And it was perhaps a bit more obvious because of all the Luton fans all staying and saluting their team. And fair play to them, right? You know, they got tremendous support and they were giving us some stick. Is there a fire drill? And there wasn't a huge amount we could say. I mean, we're on a title run in here. People, I think it's not just about supporting the team through the game. It's about clapping them off at the end as well.
Yeah, I think energy-wise, there was a lot that just kind of seeped out in that second half. So not that I'm saying people were right to leave, but I can kind of understand it because the game...
I can't.
The game was dead. And honestly, like you, if I'm there as a fan, I do stay until the final whistle.
It was one of the dullest second halves I think I've ever seen, Stoney. I think...
Do you know what? You said that. I'm finding it hard to find anything dull at the moment about Arsenal. I mean, on Sunday after the game against Man City and everyone going, oh, it was a bit boring for the neutral and, you know, I don't care about the neutral, as I said. But I'm not finding it dull because I think the boys are putting in a tremendous amount of effort and we should acknowledge that at every opportunity we get.
Yeah, no, I don't dispute that. But yeah, I'm not going to pretend it was exciting. In the second half, right, it got to sort of the 70-minute mark and I was like, has there even been a shot in the second half, like from anyone? And I looked and there hadn't. Neither team had a shot. And I'll tell you when the first shot of the second half happened, in the 79th minute.
Eddie Nketiah?
No, Tommy Asu, little P roller into the goalie's arms.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's 34 minutes of a second half. Neither team had a shot. I mean, that's pretty unusual, Stoney.
I
mean,
I agree.
You are a proper purist, you are. If you enjoyed that.
What I'm saying is that it's the effort that the boys are making. You said they ran further than normal.
Yeah.
And I just think that we should stay and watch them do that, really.
No,
because
I agree
if they're
with you.
Putting in that much effort, we at least should show our support for the entire game.
Talk
anyway,
Sport were hammering the atmosphere after. I mean, they don't need much.
Jason Cundy was having a
they
go.
Don't, they don't need much encouragement, do they, to have a little pop? But it's all, take it from me, Art, because you weren't around in the sort of 80s and 90s. Whenever we play a team that you're expected to roll over, it's never as good, the atmosphere. No. But it's not as good at Anfield. If they're home to Luton, it's not as good at Old Trafford, Spurs, wherever.
Let's have a look tonight. When Liverpool are invariably 5 or 6 up, and hopefully it's no more than that, and hopefully actually it's less against Sheffield United this evening. Let's have a look at how empty Anfield is in the 80th minute, because I wasn't particularly happy about the way so many people left. But anyway, hey, I hope you enjoyed seeing the 10 o'clock news from the comfort of your armchair, because some of us missed it.
The Piccadilly line went down, didn't it? So
yeah,
they were actually
did.
quite shrewd, those people that left early. So
I see.
The overground also had issues, so it took me longer than usual to get home as well.
I don't care. We've all got to make sacrifices in the title running. This is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. Ian Stone, Art DeRoche and Adrian Clark here. And we're going to stay here till the end, ladies and gentlemen, on Handbrake Off, the Athletic's Arsenal podcast. Brighton up next at the weekend. Next 6 fixtures. Brighton away, Bayern Munich at home, Villa at home, Bayern Munich away, Wolves away and Chelsea at home. Blimey, it doesn't get any easier, does it, Adrian?
No. That is a tough old run. Really hard.
And by the way, Tottenham and Man United are way to come after that.
Yeah, which is why we needed to give players a breather. So, yeah, it's the two on the horizon, Brighton away and Munich at home. They're really hard games. And we'll need Rice. We'll need Saka. We'll need them to be at their very best. I think Jesus is very much an option for that Bayern Munich game, given how much he loves the Champions League as well. So, yeah, it's going to be hard, but, you know.
It's what we're here for.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Exactly. Brighton, we outplayed Brighton at home. I thought the way we shut them down was incredible, like in terms of the suffocation.
That was a superb performance, that, wasn't it? We missed a lot of chances, didn't we, in that game? But in the end, we absolutely battered them.
We destroyed them. And De Zerbi, I don't think he could believe how good we were. And and I'm fascinated to see what he's going to do, because he's such a bright coach. I'm really interested to see if he tries to do something a little bit left field to change things up this time around. That's going to be a hard one, but we did all right there last year. We've scored goals at that stadium, so hopefully.
It's a strange game last year, Art. Yeah. I mean, we won 4-2, but they kept coming back into it. They had a very, very tight offside goal disallowed that would have made it 4-3 or...
Yeah, 4-3,
Maybe it was 4-3. It all got a little bit nervy. I was never really totally settled until Martinelli buried that last goal from, by the way, beautiful pass from Martin Ødegaard that I can see in my head when I shut my eyes. Yeah, they're not easy to play against. They give us a tough game, and the way they build up through the pitch as well. But it'd be interesting. You'd think that Arsenal have taken a real step forward this season, and you would hope that we can go to Brighton and get a result.
Not just this season. I think that performance and that result was actually one of those steps forward, because when you look at the rhythm of that game, I think in previous years, Arsenal probably would have drawn that, I reckon. But that was one of the few games last season where you felt Arsenal were winning games that they would previously draw. So when you look at how they've evolved since then, I think that result, the result at Tottenham as well, Palace away as well, these grounds where they tend to struggle, now they kind of find it a bit easier to settle. And as Arteta and a few of the players say, live the game. So that kind of gives me a bit more encouragement going back down to the Amex this weekend.
What I'll say about Brighton, Stoney, is that they're not as good going forward as they have been in the past. They're not scoring that many goals. We saw against Liverpool, I think they had over 30 shots. I know it was at home, but Brighton...
Brighton were in it though, weren't they?
They were in it in the first half.
Even 10 minutes from the end, I remember I was standing we're waiting in the bar at City, waiting to go out and watch the game. And we were watching the Brighton game, and there were a couple of chances at 2-1.
Mm. Look, they're a good team. They've only scored 3 goals in their last 5 games. 0-0, obviously, at Brighton the other day. I just think that this version of Brighton is weaker than probably the Brighton that we encountered at the Amex last time. So I'm confident we can go there and win, but we'll have to play well, obviously.
Yeah, we do have to play well. And Bukayo Saka hopefully back at the weekend. I mean, I ran into my pal Lucy last night, and she'd just been speaking to someone from the club, and there was a sort of certain tight-lippedness about her and telling me about, you know, what the prognosis for Bukayo. I'm reading different things. Maybe I shouldn't get too sort of wound up with it, and hopefully he'll turn up. But he doesn't miss games unless it's really something not quite right.
Yeah, well, I mean, Arteta was asked about it last night, and he basically said Luton was too quick a turnaround for him, which is understandable if it is a muscle injury, which it was in the international break, a hamstring. So I'm not too fussed with him missing out that one. With Bayern in mind as well, if he was to miss Brighton because they were holding him for Bayern, I wouldn't be too fussed. And that's also why it's really important that players around the squad were getting minutes, because you may need them to give people like Saka a bit more time to recover properly.
Who would you play on the right if Saka's rotated?
On the right. I don't think Reece did enough to warrant a start last night. So
no.
It was strange that he chose Martinelli to actually play on the right. I don't know whether he'd do the same again.
I think Jesus is who I'd go for.
Jesus was the one that was in my mind.
We got options, though, haven't we? I mean, I suppose that's the point, because I think at this point, it's almost impossible to predict the starting lineup. I think very few of us would get all 11, really, because you just don't know. Because obviously, you know, Jorginho's been coming in for the big games, but is Brighton a big enough game when we got Bayern on the Tuesday? You think maybe resting for that? Maybe Thomas Partey will start again. It is really difficult to say. Kai Havertz is on, I think it's 8 yellows now. If he needs to avoid getting 2 in 2, otherwise he gets a 2-game ban. Stop diving about, Kai.
That's a bad one. Yeah,
it's
a bit bad
embarrassing.
One. Yeah, we don't like to see that, do we?
We don't.
It's one of those, you can't defend it. You know, it's a supporter, is someone, you know, that's got to talk about football. You got to call it as it is. And yeah.
It is true. When the Luton fans singing, "You are embarrassing," we really should have gone, "We all agree with you. We all agree." To be honest with you, yeah, we feel the same way.
If it's 2 games that he's got to avoid 2 yellows in, you got to have enough about you to do that. That's not hard to avoid 2 yellows in back.
Well, it's not like he's a combative midfield player putting tackles in. I mean, but you know what? It might be even sort of vaguely putting an arm in someone's face, and some officious referee might give him when he's jumping, which has happened a few times this season. So he's got to watch it, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's involved in a lot of jaws, so I wouldn't be surprised if he picks up another yellow in the next 2 games.
It's a good assist, by the way, for Ødegaard, wasn't it? Lovely weighted pass across the face of goal. I thought, yeah.
Nice little exchange, wasn't it? Yeah. Emile Smith Rowe gives it to Ødegaard, he gives it to Havertz. Perfect weight of the pass. Although obviously Ødegaard's finish just made it look. So, I mean, he hit that ball so beautifully. One more thing, looking at this season v last, it's another 2 points improvement on last season. We now have 5 more points from the equivalent 30 fixtures from last season after yesterday's win. It's essentially the 4 points of Man City plus another one, isn't it, really? I mean, do you read a lot into this art, really? In the end, I just think we've expended less energy to get to this point. That's my feeling about it. And I think we're doing great. And we're top of the league, if you're listening today. So, you know, I'm just happy with it. Does it really matter if we got more than last season from the same fixtures?
Not really, because it's a different season and everything's changed. But what I would say is, when you look at the way things went last year in April, obviously draw at Liverpool, draw this time at Manchester City, the next game Arsenal drew last year, this time they've won it. So when you look at momentum, I think that's probably the biggest thing when you're looking at season to season comparisons with how Arsenal are doing.
Everyone's saying that Arsenal got the toughest run in, that's why we're the outsiders of the three. But if you look at the remaining games, the exact remaining games that we've got, we won them all except for one last season, which was Man United away, which we absolutely should have won. And based on current form, we should absolutely win this time around. So all we've got to do really is match what we did last season in those fixtures.
We'll
be in the mix, you know.
Well, we're certainly in the mix. I mean, the amazing fact is we could win the last 8 games and that would mean we won 17 out of 18 and still not win the title. It's an utterly ridiculous season. But you know what? We're in the mix. I like the sound of that. Let's have a song to finish. Art, what you got?
Title has nothing to do with football or Arsenal. I'm just...
That's a surprise for you, Art. I mean, come on.
And I don't want people to be alarmed by the title as well.
Oh, God, what have we got?
So it's a song called New Slaves by Kanye West, but it's purely the second half of it for how it sounds. I tweeted a clip of, well, that included the music after Smith Rowe got Man of the Match last night. And yeah, I think the way it sounds is just how I want to feel all the time. So that's why I've gone for that.
All right, right then. Yeah, we want you to feel the way you want to feel, not the way you were feeling before the game, before you heard Emile Smith-Rowe's name, which just pep you up no end. Adrian, what about you?
Oh, root one here. Lots of changes last night, so let's go for a bit of Bowie, shall we?
Changes.
Always happy to hear David Bowie, whatever he does. I'm going, this is not a criticism. This is more a plea, right? Wretch 32, don't go, please stay. I saw him do this. I actually got back from a Glastonbury one year and they do little performances in the BBC bit and they had him singing and it was great. I love that song. But I'm saying it to our supporters. You know what? There are a number of station options. If one goes down, there are different ways. You can walk the archway. That's what we did last night. Anyway, don't go, please stay. Wretch 32.
Don't go. Don't leave. Please stay with me.
That's it for the podcast. Oh, hang on a minute. Art has something else to say. I mean, you've had 40 minutes, Art, but now, what do you want, Art? What is it?
Rich 32 is an Arsenal fan.
Is he? You know what? I like that you said that. Is he? Well, okay. Well, Mr. 32, I hope you're listening. It's nice to meet you, and I love that song. It's a great song. That's it for the pod. Thanks to Adrian Clark. Thanks to Art de Roche. Thanks to Jay, our producer. Thank you for listening. Yeah, enjoy your weekend, hopefully. Have a nice time in Brighton, and we'll see you after that. Ta-ra.